Night was fast coming on. In the dim twilight, distant objects became confused and indistinct. It was the end of autumn, that melancholy season which suggests so many gloomy thoughts and recalls so many blighted hopes. The child had gone into the house. Bertrand, still sitting at the door, resting her forehead on her hand, thought sadly of her uncle's words, recalling in imagination the past scenes which they suggested, the time of their childhood, when married so young, they were as yet only playmates, prefacing the graver duties of life by innocent pleasures, then of the love which grew with their increasing age, then of how this love became altered, changing on her side into passion, on his into indifference. She tried to recollect him as he had been on the eve of his departure, young and handsome, carrying his head high, coming home from a fatiguing hunt and sitting by his son's cradle. And then also she remembered bitterly the jealous suspicions she had conceived, the anger with which she had allowed them to escape her, the consequent quarrel, followed by the disappearance of her offended husband, and the 8 succeeding years of solitude and mourning. She wept over his desertion, over the desolation of her life, seeing around her only indifferent or selfish people, and caring only to live for her child's sake, who gave her at least a shadowy reflection of the husband she had lost. "Lost, yes, lost forever," she said to herself, sighing, and looking again at the fields whence she had so often seen him coming at this same twilight hour, returning to his home for the evening meal. She cast a wandering eye on the distant hills, which showed a black outline against a yet fiery western sky, then let it fall on a little grove of olive trees planted on the farther side of the brook which skirted her dwelling. Everything was calm. Approaching night brought silence along with darkness. It was exactly what she saw every evening, but to leave which required always an effort. She rose to re-enter the house, when her attention was caught by a movement amongst the trees. For a moment she thought she was mistaken, but the branches again rustled, then parted asunder, and the form of a man appeared on the other side of the brook. Terrified, Bertrand tried to scream, but not a sound escaped her lips. Her voice seemed paralyzed by terror, as in an evil dream. And she almost thought it was a dream, for notwithstanding the dark shadows cast around this indistinct semblance, she seemed to recognize features once dear to her. Had her bitter reveries ended by making her the victim of a hallucination? She thought her brain was giving way, and sank on her knees to pray for help. But the figure remained. It stood motionless, with folded arms, silently gazing at her. Then she thought of witchcraft, of evil demons, and superstitious as everyone was in those days. She kissed a crucifix which hung from her neck, and fell fainting on the ground. With one spring the phantom crossed the brook and stood beside her. "Bertrand," it said in a voice of emotion. She raised her head, uttered a piercing cry, and was clasped in her husband's arms. The whole village became aware of this event that same evening. The neighbors crowded round Bertrand's door, Martin's friends and relations naturally wishing to see him after this miraculous reappearance, while those who had never known him desired no less to gratify their curiosity, so that the hero of the little drama, instead of remaining quietly at home with his wife, was obliged to exhibit himself publicly in a neighboring barn. His 4 sisters burst through the crowd and fell on his neck weeping. His uncle examined him doubtfully at first, then extended his arms. Everybody recognized him, beginning with the old servant Marguerite, who had been with the young couple ever since their wedding day. People observed only that a riper age had strengthened his features and given more character to his countenance and more development to his powerful figure, also that he had a scar over the right eyebrow, and that he limped slightly. These were the marks of wounds he had received, he said, which now no longer troubled him. He appeared anxious to return to his wife and child, but the crowd insisted on hearing the story of his adventures during his voluntary absence, and he was obliged to satisfy them. 8 years ago, he said, the desire to see more of the world had gained an irresistible mastery over him. He yielded to it and departed secretly. A natural longing took him to his birthplace in Biscay, where he had seen his surviving relatives. There he met the Cardinal of Burgos, who took him into his service, promising him profit, hard knocks to give and take, and plenty of adventure. Some time after, he left the Cardinal's household for that of his brother, who, much against his will, compelled him to follow him to the war and bear arms against the French. Thus he found himself on the Spanish side on the day of St. Quentin, and received a terrible gunshot wound in the leg. Being carried into a house or an adjoining village, he fell into the hands of a surgeon, who insisted that the leg must be amputated immediately, but who left him for a moment and never returned. Then he encountered a good old woman, who dressed his wound and nursed him night and day, so that in a few weeks he recovered and was able to set out for Artigas,